LA is vast, vibrant, simultaneously stunning as well as challenging and confusing. At Together LA, this city is our passion. We know that loving LA well starts with listening, pounding the pavement in search of the individuals invested in the flourishing of Los Angeles. These are the inspiring stories and real-life interviews with the men and women who work to bring the gospel to LA in their unique ways. Thanks for joining us as we bring you closer to the heart of LA, one story, one voice, and one neighborhood at a time. This is the Together LA Listening Tour.
Well, everyone, welcome to another episode of Together LA's The Listening Tour. So today I get a chance to talk to Martha Juarez Garcia. Martha, how are you?
I'm well. Thank you for having me this morning. Thank you very much.
So as we're sitting here, what neighborhood of LA do you live in, Martha?
I currently live in the city of Carson.
Got it. For you, how long have you lived in Carson? How long have you lived in LA? Have you always been born and raised in the area, LA area?
Always in Los Angeles, definitely. Carson is about 19 miles down from downtown LA. So it's a distance. It's a different world. I think when people think of Los Angeles, you have Los Angeles and then you have greater Los Angeles, right? So it's totally a different culture, a different world, because I have friends that live, let's say, in Long Beach, and they say, no, I'm not from Los Angeles. I'm from Long Beach, which is just a neighboring city, right? So it's just perspective.
Yeah. Did you grow up inside LA or always just been part of the greater LA?
No, I grew up in Los Angeles. I grew up in Watts. A scary place, but a beautiful place because it formed me. And a place where for a long time I was ashamed to share where I grew up, because it was just it was a survival mode growing up in Watts, right? But as a believer now, I'm growing up and I say, okay, well, everything was instrumental. Everything had its role. So I went to schools in public schools in Los Angeles. I was an angry teen. So I ended up getting kicked out about 5 high schools and I ended up graduating from a continuation high school in downtown Los Angeles.
Wow. So when you're Watts, like your parents, did they immigrate here? Are you a first or second generation individual? Did your parents immigrate here from outside the U.S.?
Yes, both my parents immigrated from Mexico. So my mom was here, I think, when she was 11 or so, and my dad when he was 13.
Got it. What did your parents do for a living?
So my dad's retired. He's just hanging out now. He lives with my sister. And my mom, she's a caretaker.
Very good. Mm-hmm. I know, for instance, like born and raised in Chicago, my parents immigrated when I was in 1972. I was born in 1977. Okay. My mom was a high school math teacher back in Shanghai, but her credentials didn't transfer through. So she always had to be a teacher's aide. My dad had to work odd jobs at a restaurant as a cook. And so growing up, we just didn't have a lot of money. I was literally a second generation born here in Chicago. And so you lived very, very poor when we grew up.
Right, I know. And the same struggles here, because the mentality of coming in from another country as an immigrant and living in a new country, you kind of bring all that in. And they, being a first generation, it was sometimes challenging. If when we went back to Mexico, they say, well, you're not Mexican. And if we were here, well, you're not American. You're like, well, what am I? So you become lost sometimes. But, you know, here we are.
Yeah. For you, describe, you mentioned Watts was a unique place. Tell me about Watts. For someone who just doesn't know very much about LA and all that stuff, tell me about the city of Watts.
The city of Watts, man, the city of Watts is such a, it's full of culture. It's full of, it's a community where people love hard, right? But there's a lot of struggles in Watts. Yeah. So many struggles. You know, one thing I can say is that growing up in Watts was a very challenging time in my life. Very challenging. Mm-hmm. Yes, it was survival mode. I think my mom's concern was never, oh, is Martha or her or my siblings going to graduate? It was just, no, I just want you not to be part of a gang, not to be part of drugs, yeah, and to be a pregnant teen. And, yeah, you know, it happened with my older sisters. So I was even more protected by my mom because of everything my older sisters went through.
In what, and this is just me just being naive, when you talk about gangs in survival mode and not being involved in gangs, how do you escape that? How do you, because it's part of that DNA as well too. How do you prevent yourself from not getting involved in gangs?
Wow. It's almost inevitable, to be honest, because yeah, if you live in a certain area, you're already associated. You're part of it by association. So I wasn't part of a gang, but my sisters and their boyfriends were. So yeah, then I was associated and I lived in a certain area. So I was associated with that. So even so, you know, girl, I went to the middle school that I went to, you know, people were like, are you from so-and-so gang? And I'm like, no, I'm not. But so-and-so is your sister and you live in so-and-so area. So you're associated. And I was in tons and tons of fights with gang members because I had to stand my ground. And if you don't stand your ground, you're going to get beat up every day.
Yeah.
It's what it is.
You mentioned early on in your interviews, you had to deal with anger and you went through different high schools. I mean, I look at you and you're a completely different person. What changed? What was that portion of growing up that you had to wrestle through some of those things that you had to deal with?
Right. So I think for some reason I can definitely share now with my journey walking with the Lord. I can see that he was with me the whole time, but then I didn't know. What changed in me was I didn't want to be part of the rule. I was the exception, right? And I made a promise to myself that I wouldn't fall into all of that. Not that, you know, my best friend, she was 14, she was pregnant. Both my sisters were pregnant at 15 and they were older than me. And I said, what am I gonna do to make this different? And what made me an angry teen was that, you know, I had a father who struggled with alcohol and continues to struggle with alcohol, and a mom who was trying to change that, right? And I was just on the outside looking in as the youngest of her daughters. How can I change that? So I just started to kind of raise myself, if you will. And I was invited, after I got kicked out of so many high schools in the LAUSD area, I ended up in a continuation high school in downtown Los Angeles. And next to the Greyhound 7th in Santa Fe, such a horrible area. I was so scared to go there. So my mom always, I will say she bullied me because she says, well, you were so tough before. Why aren't you tough now? Now that you're with in that school. I mean, everybody yeah. who went to that school was either on probation or going to jail soon or something of that, or very serious, you know, criminal cases if you have, what have you. So I was there, and that's when I realized, you know, I kept fighting with this other girl, and the principal says, if you guys continue fighting, both of you are not going to graduate. And that hit me because I promised myself that I would graduate from high school and yeah. that I would be somebody. So I had this young girl, she, you know, I was 16. She spit in my face.
Mm.
Because she really wanted me to not graduate. And I said, what am I going to do? And I remember then that was a pivotal point in my life when I said, no, Martha, you're not going to hit her back. You're going to walk away. And I didn't know God. I'm still an angry teen. And I said, the only way that I can keep moving forward is to make a change. And the change mm-hmm. is to walk away. Mm-hmm. Even though everybody made fun of me, even though I was embarrassed, it was the most humiliating time of my life. I can say that was one of the most humiliating times of my life. And I remember just wiping off the spit of my face and just leaving all my books behind, walking to the bus stop and said, I'm going to graduate. I'm yeah. going to be somebody. And I did that, and I heard, you know, all the noise, all the in the background, everybody, you know, calling me names. It was not fun. I went home, and I told my mom, and she slapped me, and she's like, "Really, you're gonna let someone do that to you?" And I remember, wow, what do I have? If my home is not a safe place, yeah.
Yeah.
If the streets are not a safe place, what is Martha going to do to have a safe place? So I just started building walls, so many walls. And that's how I protected myself.
Yeah.
And that was that. So it's growing up in a home where there's a lot of turmoil, where you don't know if the rent's going to get paid, if your father's going to, you know, go to work or not, or if your mom's going to be in a good mood or so. She was always attentive. She was all, we never missed a meal or anything, but her concern was just trying to change my father. Sure. So I just kind of raised myself when I was 15 and on, even though I was in my home, I did whatever I wanted.
Yeah. As you look back, like for instance, do you have kids, Martha?
I do. I have an 11-year-old and a 6-year-old daughter, two girls.
How, because a lot of times how you were raised up influences you, whether you like it or not.
Absolutely.
How did you have to change and do things differently? And what is it that you are learning or you learned throughout your life that you're imparting in your kids right now?
The traumas that I went through and the traumas that still, you know, haunt me every day. I think I just dying to self every morning and saying, okay, Martha, what are those things that you remember that,
yeah,
that now as an adult, like I have to literally tell the little Martha, hey, Martha, it's okay. Go walk in. You're going to be okay. So I have to tell my daughters, like, you know, it's okay to say no. It's okay to cry. It's okay to walk away. You don't have to confront everybody. You don't have to excuse yourself. You don't have to explain yourself to anyone. All you have to know is that you have to be able to know that you're complete and whole because there's someone that loves you and created you.
Yeah. One of the things I appreciate, the word that you just said, remember. A lot of times we don't do a very good job of remembering because, hey, look, it's a pain point in my life. I just want to walk away from it. Sure. But it's the culmination of good or bad that has made us into the person that we are today. And so sometimes we have to remember the lessons,
yes,
that we have to learn and apply it so we could change the lives of the different people around us and change the trajectory of our life and where it goes to.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
What keeps you strong during that period of time? Because a lot of times I look at you and you're a very strong person. You went through a lot of different things. It takes someone very, very strong. What kept you going? And for those who are listening, a lot of times they may be dealing with issues in their life. They may be dealing with problems. They look at your story and says, how did you get yourself going through all of those things? What's your advice to them?
My advice is just to keep focused, right? And it's still something that I struggle with. Keep focused. Have one thing that has that. What moves you? What moves you and what makes you want to keep forward? And that, and knowing that everybody has a story and not taking things personal, because I think sometimes that's what happens. And I struggle with it to this very day, just remembering, Martha, there's a point A and a point B, and everything is surely going to pass. And you're going to get, everything will surely pass. And knowing that everybody has a story and that everything that everybody says, it's because they have their own story too. They're probably not trying to hurt you. They have their own story.
Yeah. And that's the key. You got to embrace the story. For some odd reason, you look at Job, you look at Joseph, you look at David. The biggest lesson that I ever learned, David, when he defeated David Goliath, you would think that he suddenly became king because all these stories were written about him. No, it actually went down because suddenly Saul was mad at him and he went after him. In the process, he loses his wife. He loses his job. He goes and loses his mentor, his best friend. You find him in Gath pretending to be a crazy person. And then later on, he ends up in a cave of Adullam. God had to tear down everything around him and say, when I tear down everything, can you still trust in me? Can you still trust in me?
That's right. And I think that's definitely key. I associate myself so much with Peter. I was angry. And my husband says, you want to cut people's ears off, Martha. And I said, man, growing up in Watts, that's what you had to do, right? But you come to a point where I became a believer. And I said, you know, when do we not cut people's ears off? And when do we start learning how to love people and meet them where they're at?
Yeah. And also, mm-hmm. Right, even learning how to, I love what you just said, when do, Peter was very repulsive. I mean, not repulsive, but he was impulsive.
Sure.
And he had to learn to control some of that stuff.
Yes. Self-control. Self-control. One of the hardest things that I had, that I've had to struggle with, because in the culture that I grew up in, if something went wrong, you fight. You fight, you defend yourself, you hit, and you do, it's survival mode. And now walking with the Lord, you can't hit somebody. You can't throw stuff at someone. I mean, you can. It's just not going to be okay, right? There's going to be repercussions. And even before there was repercussions, but now when you're like, wait a minute, who am I? Who do I represent? And who lives in me? And then you start walking forward. And that's when you have to, when I talk about dying to self every morning, I'm saying, hey, you know what, Martha? I have to talk to myself and talk to the little girl inside of me and say, hey, Martha, what they said, don't take it personal. They have a story too, just the way you have a story. So show them some grace and show them some mercy, because that's all we can do right now. If we all fight, forget it.
Yeah. Martha, I think a lot of times right before Martha and I actually had a conversation right before we jumped on, and you were sitting there. I was looking at all these different people and he had these wonderful titles. I look at our conversation right now, and this is such an important conversation because I love your journey. I love what you've been sharing about, because clearly God has been doing something in your life in the last 2 decades of your entire life.
Yes, I was sharing with you, sure, that, you know, looking at the past speakers and looking at their titles, directors, doctors, you know, managers and all this good stuff. And I recently, you know, left the city of Los Angeles. I was working with them since I was 15 years old and, you know, had different roles. And I was telling my husband, I said, well, you know, they need a title and so on and so forth. And I said, I don't have a title right now because I don't work for someone full time or so on and so forth. Right. And God told me, Martha, well, you don't need a title. And it's one thing that I've been struggling with so much, is identity, right? Where you become part of something, when, especially with people who are grew up in broken homes, you don't have an identity. You don't have it because you're trying to be part of something and you don't feel part of it. So then now I've been taken away and now I don't have that title anymore. And God says, well, your title is a believer. Your title is daughter of a king. And that's the most beautiful title. And it brought tears to my eyes because I've been fighting so much with, you know, what is my title? Is my title this? Is my title that? And it brought so much joy to me to hear God's voice and let me know this morning, your title is believer. Your title is daughter of a high king, despite all the challenges that you went through, Martha. And that brought so much joy to me.
And who knows, 5 years from now, when we do sit down and have this conversation again, mm-hmm. you're going to come back and says, that was a turning point in my life. That was a defining moment in my life mm-hmm. where I had to be in the desert, where I had no title. And I had mm-hmm. to figure out whose I belong to versus what I do and what my title is.
Exactly. Yes. I mean, I recently turned 40 and I was in a hospital bed, and that's what I was talking. I said, God, you know, it was during COVID. And I said, well, why am I here, Lord? Why am I in this hospital bed? And he clearly spoke to my spirit and he said, you know what, Martha, you've spent 40 years in the desert. And it was just so symbolic, right? Because I turned literally 40 years old. And I said, wow. And he goes, and I'm taking you out now. So it's like you mentioned, it's a pivotal point in my life. And I'm saying, okay, let's do this. Where am I going? What my title is? I don't have an answer to that. But I know that he does. And I got to keep walking, right? So.
City of Los Angeles, how long were you working there for?
Wow, 15, it was nearly 17 years. I had a break in service when I moved to Texas, and I went to school, Abilene Christian University out there. And but a total of 17 years.
Martha, how has Los Angeles changed over time for you?
Wow, it's changed as in the population, it's just more and more populated, right? But it's changed for me as perspective. I don't think LA has changed in the way of becoming better, I can say. You know, I was in politics for so long, but it's changed my perspective, in my perspective, in the ways where you know, people are people, and people are going to do whatever it is that is allows them to survive. And no matter what the law is, no matter what politics are saying, people will continue to do as they desire if there is no other change from above.
Yeah, it's tough. For you, what were you doing in LA during that time for all those? What were the different roles that you had in the city of LA?
I was a council aide, and then I was a caseworker, and then I was a scheduling director, and then the director of operations for a council member. And it was a very challenging times, you know, especially during COVID. But there was so much work to be done, even from just when I first started with the city, just answering phone calls, you know, the basic city needs when people just needed a stop sign, to where, you know, people to now where people are asking, what is the change for homelessness? What are you guys going to do about, you know, the homeless community and how that ties in? And as me being a believer, you know, I have a different view, you know, of how things, you know, may roll out. But there's such a big stigma on, you can't mix, you know, church and state. So it's like, when do I speak up? When do I not speak up? But it's been beautiful. And God has used me in ways, in different ways, even if it wasn't directly in any policies. But there's so many people in City Hall that would come to me for prayer. And if there was a role that I needed to have, or there was something that the Lord put me in that place for, that's where I became a believer. My coworker, you know, introduced me to her church and said, there's something wrong with my heart. And I had no idea what she was talking about. I said, what's wrong with my heart? When I was 19, I thought there was something physical, but what she was trying to say is that I, you know, God wants to come into your heart. And it's been such a big, City Hall plays a big, big role in my life.
And this is actually something, in some sense, where people would sit there. What made you decide it was time to leave? And in some sense, for some people who are looking, when is it time to leave? Because you were working there since 15 years old. Right. When do you walk away?
When do you walk away? I walked away because God told me to walk away. I was in prayer. There was so much, so many changes. The council member that I was working for, was leaving office, so it was coming close to an end, and that was it was perfect timing. But also there was a lot of my mental health, there's a lot of in politics, there's so much, you know, I mean, you've seen probably recently in the news, if you've seen everything going on with politics in Los Angeles, it's so beautiful, but yet it's so complicated, right? So I started getting ill mentally and physically, and I literally put it in the hands of God. I said, God, I don't know where I'm going to do after this, because my identity was attached to what that title I had with the city. And finally, when I prayed, and God says, you have to let it go, and I'm going to give you something new. So I decided to leave the city, because through prayer, God said, you got to go. And here I am now.
Yeah. Yeah. What are you currently doing for City LA?
For City to City, I'm working with Pastor Rudy Paniagua, and he is heading the Spanish cohort for the Church Planters of City to City.
Got it. For LA, what is it that you love about LA? What is it, what gives you hope within the city as you walk the streets of LA, or even now kind of live in this part of greater LA? But when you look at LA, what gives you hope?
What gives me hope? That's challenge. That's a tough question. Sometimes it doesn't give me hope, because I see it deteriorating more and more. It's not the same LA from when I was a kid. I see some of the same people. When I go back, my mom still lives in Watts. When I go back, I still see the neighborhood that I grew up in. And is it better? It's not better. It's gotten worse. People's hearts are a lot more hardened. There's friends of mine who, you know, lots have been killed, right? Many are in jail. So I don't know. The only hope I have is in the Lord. But I also say, you know, is there hope, Martha? I don't know sometimes.
Yeah.
It's a tough place. It's a very tough place.
Mm-hmm. it reminds me of Nicodemus, where when he heard that the walls of Jerusalem were down, Israel were down, he had a burden for those walls. He wanted to rebuild those walls. And for all of us who are living in the city of LA, who love the city of LA, it's building one wall at a time and continue to understand the problems and figure out tangible solutions to really be able to engage it.
Absolutely. It's like, you know, also Nehemiah's when he had to build those walls, right? And then you think about all the instructions that, you know, God gave Moses, here is your tablets, here are your instructions. He gave Noah, here's your instructions to build the ark. Like, do we have instructions to rebuild LA? There's so many thoughts and so many input, but how do we rebuild LA? Do we have people who come in from different cities and different states who come and run for office and then they build LA? I don't know if that's the answer.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Agreed. Yeah. On the fun side, Martha, if I do come to LA, where are some of your favorite restaurants that you say, Tommy, here are some of the things that you need to be doing in LA, or here are some of the things that you need to be going if you're in LA? What would you say?
Sure. Well, I'm biased because I love Mexican food and there's this new place in downtown and it's fairly new. It's called Sonora Town and they have great tacos. The tortillas are made from scratch and the meat is steak. It's so, so amazing. You won't have a taco different from that. You go to the Arts District and they have so many different pastries. If folks like healthy food, there's so many healthy bites, but that is probably my favorite Sonora Town in downtown LA, but I keep away from it because it's a wild place now, you know, at night. But it's still so, so beautiful. So I have to say that there is something that I have to keep my heart because my heart's not that healed yet. So I have to stay away sometimes.
Don't you feel like a lot of times in the last decade, LA has grown so much because downtown LA wasn't what it is right now?
It is night and day. Oh my God. No, before you can walk in the streets before and LA is known for Skid Row. Skid Row has always been there, sure. And it's heartbreaking. But now more and more so you see many more tents that it's just engulfing downtown LA. With so many tents.
Got it. And then even the presence of the Staples Center in that whole area where the Lakers and everything has completely been built out, right?
Oh my God. Yes. I mean, now it's Staples Center is now the crypto .com center. And it, you know, the names have changed. So many things have changed, but there's the community in the area. I mean, but people still come from all over the world to Los Angeles. And I think sometimes it's a beautiful place. And not until you grow up and you live to, you know, I think of that song that took to live and die in LA to know what it is to live in Los Angeles is different, but there's 15 different districts in Los Angeles. We all have different perspectives. We all don't think LA is different to everyone.
Yeah. Martha, where can people find you? Instagram, Facebook, where can they find you?
Yes, they can find me on Instagram at Martha Juarez Garcia and on Facebook on Juarez Garcia Martha as well.
Very, very good. Thank you so much for finding some time. It was an honor. It was a pleasure to get to know you a little bit more.
Yes, thank you for having me. Take care.
We'll talk soon.
All right.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the Together LA Listening Tour. To stay connected, make sure you subscribe to the Together LA channel, rate and review this episode, and make sure to share on your social media platforms. We would love for you to follow along with Together LA on Instagram, Facebook, and our website at www.togetherla.net. See you next time.